You know, every time I speak, I want the truth to come out. You know what I'm saying? Every time I speak, I want to shiver. You know, I don't want them to be like, they know what I'm going to say because it's polite. They know what I'm going to say. And even if I get in trouble, you know what I'm saying? That ain't that what we're supposed to do? I'm not saying I'm going to rule the world or I'm going to change the world, but I guarantee that I will spark the brain that will change the world.
I think what you're trying to ask is, why am I so insistent upon giving out to them that blackness, that black power, that black pushing them to identify with black culture? I think that's what you're asking. It's, I have no choice over it. In the first place, to me, we are the most beautiful creatures in the whole world, black people. I mean, and I mean that in every sense, outside and inside. And to me, we have a culture that is surpassed by no other civilization, but we don't know anything about it. So again, I think I've said this before in this same interview, I think at some time before, my job is to somehow make them curious enough or persuade them by hook or crook to get more aware of themselves and where they came from and what they are into and what is already there, and just to bring it out. This is what compels me to compel them, and I will do it by whatever means necessary.
I am your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, and welcome to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. We are the return of intelligent radio as we ensure the free flow of opinions and push the envelope on the questions America's afraid to ask in the mainstream media. Good morning to all the intellectual outcasts out there listening this morning. Glad to have you with us. I have a couple of special guests on for this morning's discussion question, and also a returning guest that many of you have heard many a time, as well as a new guest. So we'll start with our returning guest, if you will, Michael Sutler. Say hello to the intellectual outcast, and let me let the cat out the bag on intellectual outcast. You are the reason I call the audience that, because you are such a curious mind, well versed in your area of expertise, but a lot of things, and been a long time member as well. So I always like to give you credit for me, in a sense, taking your nickname that I gave you and applying it to all of the audience. But glad to have you back with me, King. If you will, say hello to the intellectual outcast and give them a little bit of your background as it relates to this morning's discussion question. Thanks for being with me, King.
Oh, man, I appreciate it as always. And good morning, Mental Dialogue community. Love being here. Always love being on the show because, you know, Montoya, you know I can wax poetic about, you know, what the show actually means to me, actually, in terms of podcasts and things to listen to, because it's one of the very few things that I do take time to listen to, and it just sucks me in and keeps me listening. But as far as I go, I'm a former engineer slash rocket scientist who became an investment manager, managing alternative investment portfolios in derivatives like commodities and currencies and options and things that have now become popular again, but I've been doing it for a very long time, coming up on 18 years in January, first as a retail side trader and now as a professional for about 13 years.
Wow, that's perfect. Glad to have you with us. And without further ado, John C. McGee II, thank you, King, for being with us. You are a first-time guest, but if you will, say hello to Michael, hello to the intellectual outcast listening, and let people know your background. I reached out to you last minute, so definitely appreciate you for making the time to be on this morning. For I understand you have an extensive real estate portfolio, but I know you do other things as well. So if you will, share any background you would like to share with the audience. Again, thank you for being with us, King.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. It's truly an honor to be among like-minded individuals. Michael, thank you for allowing me to be in your just in your presence, my friend. You've got an extensive resume, so thank you for that. I am John C. McGee II, originally from Florida, living here in Atlanta. My parents had a property management company by accident, so I got to see that, you know, my upbringing. Every time they saved up the money to purchase a car, they used that money to purchase a home. So that turned into them managing these properties. I've been an investor for quite some time, had some not so great lenders, So that led me to cross the line and help others. Oftentimes we can all find a deal, but the biggest hurdle usually comes in funding that deal. So I have a partner in lending at VI Capital. So feel free to reach out to us, vicapitallending.com. And there we try to help you cross the finish line or overcome those hurdles in lending.
I love it. And so what happened was I reached out to Michael again, longtime returning guest on the show, and said, hey, I wanted to just get into some nuts and bolts of investing, allow the listeners out there, y'all can join in this morning and ask questions of both of our experts. And I just realized, had an epiphany a couple of days ago, I'm like, okay, if I'm just going to use generally investing, I'm missing a piece of that most people actually have a good perspective on, if you will, investing in real estate. So again, glad to get you at the last minute, but it just did not make sense to have a conversation about investing as if, in a sense, the markets were the only thing. And in general, quite often real estate, or some people think, you know, so even buying their homes is a form of investing, and we'll get into that a little later. But a lot of people invest in real estate, so it would only make sense for me to have you. Actually got another member who may get in a little later, and we'll talk about investing in business, if you will, and I'm assuming both of you, in a sense, have done that, so we'll get into some of that as well. But the way I like to start the show, before we go to our first break, Michael, you've done this before, so we'll start off with you, is when I called you and said the question is pretty simple today, it seems broad, if you will, but when you heard the question, can you answer my questions about investing? Again, very broad question. But when you heard it worded that way, and again, you are familiar with our show, we always do the show in the form of a question. I go by Black Socrates. So the idea is to take the Socratic method to get to the answers on some of these things that we want to figure out, or, you know, in this case, investing. But when you heard the question worded that broadly, when I reached out maybe a month ago, do you recall your first thought? I know it's been a month ago, or at least leading up to the show this morning. What was one of your first thoughts this morning, leading up to this show this morning?
Man, a month in time, if it's not on the chart, is too far back for me to remember. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you, like, just looking at it, you know, can I answer your question? You know, I always laugh at that, because it's like, if I can't answer the question, I will get you to somebody who will. Or like you said, I'm listening to John, he probably can round it out. So the answer is a definitive yes.
I love it. John, if you will, just a quick thought, if you can recall, I just hit you a couple of days ago. So, hey, here's what we're talking about. So if you caught that question or saw it when I first posted it to you, do you remember what popped in your head, hopefully just a day ago? What was just the initial thought? We'll get into the second and third thought after the break.
First thought was, yes. the long pause was, you know, did I do something wrong? Did somebody overpromise? I don't want to underdeliver. So it was some hesitation, but as my friend Michael said, it, even if I don't have the answer, we'll figure it out and I'll get the answer. So. It was a little bit of a pause, and then yeah.
Makes sense. Nah, I love it. That's what I like. I'm always curious when people hear the question, and a lot of times I'll say this real quick, especially for new listeners. Quite often the question is worded in a way to, in a sense, particularly get a rise out of the audience or make them want to listen. This one was kind of broad and bland to a degree, but I was definitely curious at what both of you guys thought, being my experts, if you will. And I know that's a big task sometimes to fill the shoes of being an expert. But at the end of the day, my audience knows I try to bring, if you will, vetted people, and you were highly recommended, John. So glad to have you on the show for the first time. But we will go to this first break, and we will – let me go ahead and give out the number for those who may want to ask their questions later on in the show. The number to get in this morning is 646-787-1691. Again, that's 646-787-1691. You do have to press 1 if you want to get in on this morning's discussion. All right, we'll be right back. All I ask is that you think.
What happens when your customers call your business and you're too busy to answer or call them back in a timely manner? You lose that business. Shockingly, 61% of inbound calls go unanswered. But fear not, tchmedia.ai is here to change the game. We specialize in capturing, nurturing, and converting your prospects into loyal customers. With our state-of-the-art communication solutions, no interaction will be left behind. When you miss a call, we've got you covered with automatic, engaging texts that keep your prospects connected and eager to choose you over your competitors. Don't let potential customers slip away. Make the smart choice with tchmedia.ai and skyrocket your conversions today. tchmedia.ai is here to change the game.
Man, you know what? First of all, again, now that we're warmed up, thank you, Ashley, because you highlight one of the key points about money in general, and especially when it comes to investing, when it comes to trading, comes to being in financial markets, is your relationship with money matters more than just about anything else that you could, whether you're starting or you've been in the market for a while. Understanding how you see, how you perceive money. Like I say, some people blow money. Some people come at it, you know, a lot of people, one of the discussions I have all the time is that investing or trading is just like gambling. It's all the same if you don't know what you're doing. It's all the same. And like she was saying, also, we live in an age, we live in the information age where there's so much out there that is paralytic to some, but to some, even if you gave them the right information, they're going to blow right past it. And I'm glad you put that clip up, because if you were to ask my opinion on the clip, most of what he said was immaterial and pretty much wrong. It's narrow. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by narrow is that I heard him say, oh, you can put, you know, stocks or bonds or mutual fund. You can invest in a ton of things in these financial markets this day. The markets have exploded. But at the end of the day, it's not just about how you perceive, which is what most people don't realize. You know, you're making decisions off of some predilection, something that you actually come up with that probably wasn't your idea in the first place. You don't realize you're coming to the market. I didn't realize I was coming to the market with it. Again, I leaned on those who I knew me well enough to say, hey, this sounds like something I would try. I knew there was some money involved. I like money. That was my launch pad, but that's definitely not what kept me in this game now 17 years. I would have long been gone. I would long have been eaten up, because one thing I will say about the financial markets, it's the most money you can make anywhere. It does not come for free, and it does not come easy.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates. This morning's discussion question, can you answer my questions about investing, featuring Michael Sutler as well as John McGee? Michael, you've been on the show so much, now you are actually a cut.
I was wondering. I was like, I've heard this. I've heard this before.
you made the cut. That is actually one of our best of 2022 shows. What was the difference between trading and investing? And I thought it was a great way to start this morning's dialogue, because at the end of the day, for anybody asking those questions, if you're looking to invest, obviously the concern is their money. How do I make my money make money, if you will? Or people are curious about that. And I just thought it was a great backdrop to kind of set up this discussion, obviously with you being in the market. But if you will, anything from your own cut that just kind of sets the, if you will, the foundation for this morning's discussion, because again, it's the relationship with money that's actually more important than anything, if you will. But go ahead, King.
You know what's really funny about that clip to me is, and any clip, it's just how I am, is like I can hear myself now. Usually when I first started, if I heard myself, I would just be cringe. But now it just sounds like another person that I've had a conversation with. And we're just talking about some of the same things that me and the rest of my, like, I've got a close-knit unit of investors that I've, and we've been lifelong friends. And we talk about these things so regularly. So that clip seems so natural outside of listening and saying, hey, I think that's me. You know, that part, mm-hmm. that it's part of our everyday, and it kind of goes to that relationship with money, in that my relationship with money has evolves so much that it's not necessarily the only thing I talk about, but it's that it's such a frequency and it's so natural now, as opposed to maybe 10 years ago and definitely 20 years ago, I wasn't having these conversations at all. But that seems like par for the course. And I'm always looking to deep in that relationship, just like I am in the rest of my important relationships, because they tend to go one with the other. What I see more almost as a delineation between my friends now that I'm in my 40s versus in my 30s and 20s, it's like the 20-year-old me was for everybody. The 30-year-old me was only for a much narrower point of view. And this 40-year version of me, I can speak to anybody. I love to talk to people about finance. But one of the quick things for me now is that if I don't hear a certain, I don't know, mindset or things of that nature, it depends on what you say as to how I respond. I'm not necessarily, I'm at that age where the whole pearls before swine becomes a real thing, because now I'm really guarded about my time. Because I'm finding that more important than money, of course, is time, because we don't know what quantity we have.
No, that makes sense. I love that thought, brother. And, again, we are fortunate enough to bring experts to have these discussions. If you will, John, just real quick, and we'll definitely get into some investing. The thing is, when I think about real estate, I think people rarely consider their relationship with money in the sense of anybody, you know, obviously wants to invest and make money. But I think it's an area that's rarely considered. So just a quick thought from you, if you will, and then we'll definitely get into the nuts and bolts of some of this, this idea about investing. But at the end of the day, I love what Michael just said, in a sense, the mindset around it. And that's what we are at Mental Dialogue, is getting, understanding the mindset into entering, whether it's markets or real estate. Just a quick thought from you, if you will, John.
Absolutely. So for me, I agree. It's definitely a mindset. Being in the lending space currently, a lot of times people come, you know, they have a business, they want to purchase this building, and, you know, they got on paper, there's no record of funds, but then, you know, they have a bag full of money. Like, no, I do have money. And so that's when we have to revert back to, That sounds good, but it's a holistic conversation. You know, we have plan for where we want to be in the future. So that being said, the person that prepared your taxes, you got to have a conversation with them. The person that's your bookkeeper, you got to have a conversation with them prior to having that conversation with the lender. But all of that, if you're rolling it back, goes to your mindset. You know, where are you? Where do you want to be? So all of it can be corrected. It can be fixed. You can grow. If you have, you know, poor credit, you can fix the credit, no problem. If you don't have, you know, money right now, you can invest and get more money. But if you don't have the mindset, none of that's going to change. Or if it does change, it's going to, you know, revert back very, very rapidly. So I wholeheartedly agree that it's all about the mindset of where you want to be in the future. As Michael was mentioning, the 30 version of him versus the 40 version of him versus the 20 version of him, I think all of us can look back at mistakes that we've made, progress that we've made. So I think that mindset, when you hear individuals that are high net worth, they rarely talk about their financial stance in life. They're talking about the mindset, because that's what it takes to not just acquire the wealth, but to keep the wealth. And
nah,
so for me, I was just going to say that that's the important part of it. Is I think 0 through 100 years old, nobody talks to you about how to keep money, how to manage the money. So if you're an athlete, entertainer, lottery winner, whatever that is, you blow through the money. So obviously these people can acquire it. That's not a big issue. But what do you do once you get it?
No, absolutely.
You get it, how do you manage it? How do you stay alive? How do you, taxes? Blah, blah, blah.
No, absolutely. No, absolutely. Absolutely. So with that said, let's kind of get into, saw this one survey, if you will, just kind of highlighting America's perspective about investing, if you will. And so this was just a little random survey of what Americans see as the best investments, if you will. And it was just generalized, and this has been pretty standard. I guess they do this survey every year, whatever, the numbers fluctuates. But typically this is, in a sense, the order that a lot of people see investing as far as, you know, what's important. And so in this survey, 34% of Americans, in a sense, thought real estate was a good investment, if you will. 26% of Americans think gold is a great investment. 18% of Americans think stock and mutual funds are a great investment. 7% bonds, cryptocurrencies, and other investments are kind of negligent on this survey, again, cryptocurrency being one of the newest or whatever, but that's just the American perspective on the different types of investments. In hearing, Michael, I'll go back to you real quick, just a quick thought on hearing, generally speaking, how Americans see the various types of investment. Obviously, you're in the markets or whatever, so I'm pretty sure your list would be different, but that is the perspective of Americans. A lot of Americans see real estate as the number one investment. Your thoughts on hearing the, just the results of that general survey that's done yearly?
Well, you know, I agree that real estate is a very attractive investment, but it's one of those things that I, when I hear this, I don't focus on what the rest of America thinks about, because if you take the bell curve, and I don't even like bell curves that much, but if you take the larger part, you know, of plus or minus one sigma of people out there that are investable, work, or have some type of assets in which they can invest, most of them are still wrong about what they think. And that's how a very small percentage of people take advantage where they can, is because most of us are pivoted wrong. And that's not necessarily to say that real estate is wrong, but if I was to look at a survey, I would look at a survey of the wealthiest or most successful Americans, pointedly those that invest in real estate, those that invest in markets, those that are business owners, because one thing that they have in common is a very common mindset. They typically come from all walks of life, but their mindset is the same. And what you'll find is that they invest in a lot of different things, but it's not so much about the what. We get so fixated on the what. Mm-hmm. It's more about the how. And the, to me, the what percentage, because one of the things that I found going from being a trader to an investor, and then, as I call myself now, a risk manager and diversifier, my goal is to figure out not necessarily how to make it. We all know how to make money to varying degrees, but like John said, you have to learn how to keep it. That is the real game. And John said something else. I have to point this out. You have to plan for where you want to be in the future, and you've got to do it way before, you know, you start, oh, I want to invest today. No, you need to develop a plan. I was talking to basically a wealth manager who takes clients who only have $10 million and up. He says that his clients and the conversations that he has with them are not about next month, next year, not even the next 10 years. They're planning out 100 years.
Wow. That's impressive. Let me get John in here. Just any thoughts real quick on just the survey in general, again, a generalized survey of what Americans see as the best investments. You with the real estate portfolio, maybe you agree with it, but again, just kind of wanted to hear your thoughts on how Americans see investments in general. Quick thought, if you will, John.
I'm trying to stay kind of middle of the road. Right. Obviously,
I don't want you to. I want you to represent.
Yeah, go with it. Go with it.
Yeah, this is your first time on the show, but we don't do middle of the road here. Just represent it how you feel, brother. We will have that dialogue either way. Represent it how you feel.
I appreciate it. So here it is. You can't be expert in everything, right? So like you said, I think it was the clip that played at the beginning of the show, that it's the technology age. So there's a wealth of information. So if you think that real estate is it for you, if you think that stocks is it for you, or it's the new shiny thing, it's never going to happen. You're never going to be able to research everything, right? You go on Walmart, the only thing you need is toilet paper and milk. But they put that at the back of the store. You got to pass Action Alley, and you end up buying a whole cart full of stuff before you get what you actually need, right?
Right.
So I think that's great that there's that survey out there, but what speaks to you? Think you get successful in what you're good at and what you like. You put those two things together, and then all the accolades start coming, right? Whether it's recognition, whether it's wealth, whether it's whatever. So I think what you like, what you have an affinity for, what you're leaning towards, lean in there, like Michael just said, create that plan and keep moving in it. But if, you know, this year it's real estate for you. Next year, it's stocks for you. The year after that, it's crypto. The year after that, it's how are you going to build any type of resume in anything if you're continuously pivoting, right?
Nah,
I'm not saying not to diversify.
No. I definitely understand that. I understand that, John. If you'll let me, I'm actually going to jump. We got a caller that wants to jump in real quick, so let's get them in here real quick. Area code 571, last 3237. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your 3 cents or question on this morning's discussion.
Hey, good morning. This is Emil. How you doing, bro?
Hey, what's going on, King? What you got for us? Go ahead and jump in this thing, brother.
Yo, these brothers are genius, and they're dropping diamonds. And I highly encourage everybody who's listening to continue listening, because it's just beautiful to hear brothers talk this way. The thing that I want to mention is black people in America have the shortest lifespan of any people in America, and therefore our planning has to look different. And when you say mindset, let's be very conscious of the fact that we have young men that are dying in their 20s and before. We have young women who are dying in maternity in greater numbers. So our planning, when you talk about mindset, has to be part of the discussion in terms of our lifespan. We spend less time in retirement than other groups of people in America. We have lower quality of life during our lesser time span on this planet. So those are things that also impact our mindset. In other words, if I don't believe I'm going to live past 30, I won't plan for past 30. If I don't believe I'm going to have a long retirement, I won't plan or save or invest as if I was going to have a long life in retirement. So for us, we have to be very mindful of the things that impact our ability to transform our mindset so we can have these discussions, not just about what money looks like or what our future looks like, but the fact that we even have a future, and then plan for what that would look like once we agree with ourselves that we're going to have a long and prosperous life, which will change a lot of our behaviors in the present tense, not including, but especially not excluding, financial planning.
No, I love it. Actually, I hadn't thought about that level of and what you're referring to a degree, if you will, Emil, is the very real trauma, in a sense, that is evident in our community of even thinking of ourselves with the short lifespans, if you will, and obviously people coming from different environments, so they think of that to a varying degree. But to his point, guys, that is an unfortunate subconscious reality for a lot of people. So sometimes he's right. It affects whether somebody even attempts to even wants to consider this type of stuff. And when I'm listening to Emil, it makes me think of when I was younger and people would make the comment, oh, you could get hit by a bus tomorrow. And I would always say, thinking from the standpoint of planning out, I would always say, well, what if you don't? You know what I mean? And just kind of just hitting them with that, just to say, yeah, what if you don't? And so he obviously brings Emil brings something major to the table. Mike, we got about a minute and a half before a break, but any thoughts on the perspective of specifically in our community, how we look at something like this and maybe how it plays a role in whether you will invest or not? It reminds me of when you told me your story of first starting out wanting to get into the space of helping others learn how to invest or managing other people's money. I remember you telling how you originally started, and a lot of it was, in a sense, to help people within our community, but you were up against some of what Emil brings to the table. So, again, about a minute before break, but just a quick thought of what that looks like in our community and maybe how you've been able to, in a sense, get past that initial stuff that you faced maybe some years ago now.
Emil called us genius and then just spoke genius. So I'm going to start there. But what he just spoke about has been the larger part of these, like I said, now 18 years pivoting from engineering into finance, was because you could see, I could feel, I grew up in this space, and growing away from it, you learn, you know, from sources of income to assets to all these expanding things. But it was a celebration for me. And y'all know this, to turn 25. Like, I had planned my life out extensively, where the college, what I was going to do. Once I turned 25, I had to make some more decisions because I honestly had not planned that well beyond that, even though my parents were there, both parents had lived and that sort of thing, but it come from that mindset. And I can say that it started with me, but also seeing I still have young clients now that are in their 20s and 30s pit up against the, well, I don't know how long I'm going to live because dad didn't live to 58. Or, you know, I just saw another rapper that's, you know, been in a coma. A couple others have died at 50. So it is a larger part of why I got in the game to learn the longer benefits, because one thing they say, you can't take it with you. That's not actually the point, though.
Nah, I love it. I love it. All right, we're going to go to a cut that's going to start hopefully a little controversy between you guys, if you will, because we like to have these real, honest conversations. So going to play this cut. If I said to both of you, someone buying a home is an investment. I wonder what that makes you think about, if you will. And so we want to have the conversation about whether buying your home is an investment. And this is a cut from Vlad TV, if you're familiar with him. And it's talking about the idea of owning a home. So let's listen to this cut, and we'll get both of your thoughts on this. And we'll let Emil jump in and out. If you want to be like Emil, for those listening via online, the number to get in is 646-787-1691. Again, that's 646-787-1691.
So let me put it like this. When it comes to commercial real estate, and which is any real estate which brings you income, I do not think that's a scam.
Well, commercial is really any real estate over 5 units or over 4 units is commercial real estate.
Okay.
But
okay, so I'm gonna include commercial real estate over 5 units. I'm also gonna include any type of real estate where you're getting rental income from.
Right. Okay. Revenue.
If you are buying, if you're investing in real estate, then and you're making income from that real estate, whether it's you live somewhere else and you're renting it out, or it's a multi-unit where you live in one and you rent out the other three, and it's covering your mortgage and so forth. I'm all for that. I'm all for that. I think that's a great investment vehicle. It's not something I choose to do personally,
right?
Because I feel stocks is a better investment vehicle. But if that's what you're doing as an investment, I'm all for it. You've developed a system for it. You know, we talked about, you know, buying and selling without a real estate agent, and so forth, and finding rehab properties and so forth. If that is what your expertise is and that's your investment vehicle, I'm all for it.
Gotcha. Okay, so I got you to reconsider a little bit.
I got you to you got me to reconsider about it.
All right, cool.
If you choose to buy a house completely in cash to live in, you have that type of cash, whether it's $200,000 or $20 million, and you decide to put all that cash into a house, I don't really recommend it, but I'm cool with it if that's what you want to do.
Okay.
Paint it all off. You don't have a mortgage. You're just paying the property taxes and whatever the maintenance is. If you buy a house for yourself,
okay,
and you know that you're definitely going to live in it for 30 years, you're not going to move. This is where you want to be when you die. You're going to be staying in the same spot, and you're going to pay off your mortgage every year until you've essentially paid it all off. You're going to stay right there. Cool. Not a bad investment strategy 40, 50 years down the line. Outside of those situations, if you want to buy a personal house, which you plan on staying in for 10 or 15 years or 5 years, and you're doing that instead of renting because you feel that you're giving your money away to the landlord instead of owning it yourself, I think this is a very poor financial decision.
Okay.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates. This morning, discussion question, can't you answer my questions about investing, as we again hear a cut from Vlad TV? John, we'll let you start on that. Your thoughts on that cut, because again, that's something that's always comes up. We've been, in a sense, sold the idea that buying your home is an investment. And so Vlad lays out all these various situations, and he says, hey, if you're not necessarily permanent with this home, in his opinion, didn't think it's a good investment if you're going to be moving around. And so we want to hear your thoughts as the one with a intensive real estate portfolio, your thoughts on that cut, if you will, King.
Sure. So I think it has to do with your personal strategy, right?
That's first and foremost. My strategy is always equity. We're never going to be able to roll back. Well, let me back up. When I get asked a question or people find out I'm a lender, they start out with, what's the interest rate, right? So I got to push back and think about, my grandmother bought an entire house for $15,000, right? Mm-hmm. If we're waiting for that day, that's never going to happen again. So if we bring it current day, my dad would never pay $100 for a pair of shoes. Now everybody's shoes are $100. So when it comes to real estate and investing there, if you're paying rent, you have to live somewhere. Everybody that is listening to this, that's going to listen to this, they're in real estate whether they want to be or not. Either you're collecting the rent or you're paying the rent. So you're in real estate. So my perspective is, let's capitalize on that. I have friends that live in high rises in Buckhead and they want to pay what they pay to live there. That's cool. If you can afford $3,000 in rent, then I think you can probably afford some type of real estate as well as an investment. The reason why, all the different write-offs that you have. So if you're paying rent to live where you live, you don't have those tax privileges or those tax benefits. So if you just transition that, just pivot slightly, purchase, whether that's a one unit, you know, a multi, whatever it is, now you get all those write-offs for the exact same money that you were spending in taxes. So when you hear people say they haven't paid taxes in however long, this is the reason why. The tax codes were written in that way. So in my eyes, if you purchase the property today, it's going to appreciate. Worst case scenario, the loan will be paid off in 30 years. Best case scenario, it'll appreciate in the next 4 to 5 years. And now you can take that equity. You can either invest it in more real estate. You can invest it in stocks. You can invest it in somewhere else. So I just feel like that equity play is the gift that allows you to do other things in life that naturally you wouldn't be able to do.
No, I love it. Love the thoughts. And so, Michael, I think I may have seen you post this, or if I didn't see it, I just happened to come across it. But Warren Buffett, and I'm going to generalize terribly, and I know you would know this better than me. Again, you may have posted this, but he highlighted that for most of Americans, he did feel like, in a sense, real estate is a decent play, kind of in the probably for some of the reasons that John just mentioned to a degree. But he highlighted personally, I think he considered it like his third best investment or something to that degree. But he just kind of highlighted, kind of jovial, you know, just being a little tongue in cheek with it, and said, "But had I invested that money, I would have a lot more money now." And again, I'm not picking a side. I just want to have the full dialogue. So I hear you laughing already. So just your thoughts in reference to what you heard Vlad say or John say. Again, just your perspective, because we're not trying to pick a right or wrong. We're just having to have the full dialogue. Go ahead, King.
Hey, you know, for me, I love Warren Buffett now much more. Again, as I get older, as I get closer to, you know, the ages where he started really making money, I see a lot of that jovial playfulness as being a shrewd businessman protecting his brand. But again, listen to what successful people say, but also watch what they do. He's right, but you got to kind of thin through this. He's right for most Americans, and this goes back to the whole bell curve thing I told you. For most Americans, yeah, buying a house makes sense. That's going to be your best investment. For me, for, you know, somebody who wants to go up and has gone up tax brackets, not hopefully that doesn't sound like, you know, cap or that kind of thing, but that's actually what happened. It's my worst investment, my personal home. That's not to say real estate, because there's rental homes, there's other land, other real estate assets that I own that perform way better. But it's like, I got to go back to the Vlad thing. Did you hear the scenarios that Vlad listed out?
Mm-hmm.
If we want to have the conversation about which one is good or there's no right or wrong, I got to pick the thing for me. Well, if you're going to pick the thing, then you probably need to have the right mindset to be strategic about it. What do you want, and put such that you say, well, given the fact that I want to bring my equity or I want to bring my purchasing power, or I want to bring, you know, my income up to some level, some place. And then you have to ask yourself, well, how long do you want to do it by? Most people are going to say as fast as possible. Well, if that's the case, you have to look at an investment not about how it makes you feel, not about how anything of the other than does it year over year, given the level of risk, and I'm not going to go down that too far, but given the level of risk, and yes, every investment has risk, everyone, does it kick off the amount of expected return? This is a term that in the finance industry we use to gauge whether the investment is good or bad over a given time frame. Does it give off the best expected return for what you're trying to do? When I look at a personal home, you know, I love my home. It's where I raised my family with my wife. I can't buy the memories that have been here. You understand what I'm saying? So, but that's not what this is about. What got me to the point of saying, hey, I want to buy a home, and my choice at that point was, do I use cash because I had it? How did I get the cash? I was renting and trading my butt off. I was also working as an engineer, saving my butt off, right? These are kind of like the stages of growth and development. And my story is going to be different from everybody else. I get that all the time. Sure. But whatever your strategy, make sure you're executing. And if, for me, at the time, because rent was nothing compared to mortgages, I was able to rent at a low rate, save a lot of money, put that money to work, make some lucky returns, and then have options of, I want to invest in a house, I want to buy a house. I had options. That's what you really want out of this. What is the path that can get you the options the fastest?
Now, it makes sense. And let me highlight what you just talked about real quick. I'm interested to hear John's thought on this as well. We are in a unique time, within our lifetime. And I don't know if I think from what I remember researching a while back, not specifically for this week, but I recall this may be the first time in American history where mortgages and rent are up at the same time. They've typically had, from what I understand, you can correct me if I'm wrong, Michael, but they've typically had an inverse of one another. And so, to your point, some years ago, and you, as you chose, like you said, you bought your personal home, you had your options, but like you said, at that time, rent was very easy for you to make money trading, so you rent it and got the money that you wanted to get. But we are in a very different time now. So, John, your thoughts about that, the place where we're at now with the rent and the mortgage is high, so it probably makes the play you said make more sense now that they're on par with each other. Your thoughts, John?
Yeah, absolutely, my friend. It's I've always thought this, but for sure now I think it's, whoever you are, you have to kind of agree. You know, everybody that you know and yourself are all having that similar thing, right, where rent is going up. If the interest rate is, quote-unquote, high, it's greater than it was previously, then that mortgage is up. So, again, that goes back to your personal strategy. What does that look like? If it's okay, I can share my quick story or my perspective. So, when I think about Michael talking about his life and his experience when it comes to, you know, revenue and how he got to where he is, I think for the listeners, it depends on where you are in life, right? So I think about it from the standpoint, if you're going to college, you got to stay somewhere. Most of the time, if you got a scholarship, they're paying for your room and board. So when I talk to people, I'm just telling them my story. If they're paying for the room and board, I got a home. My mortgage was... it was $46,000, two bedrooms. My mortgage was $460-something, and I rented my second room to my roommate for $485. So I lived free for 3 years, right? I'm not smart. I didn't do anything, you know, great. I just did what I thought was the best thing to do. Then 3 years later, I sold it for $113,000. So nice. At 19, I bought or 18, bought it at 46. I'm 21 years old now, and I made a surplus of $40,000. So I'm saying that's not the usual thing, you know, for a 21-year-old. However, having a pocket of cash at that age
had to have the mindset to figure out what would be the next move, right? So I'm saying that most people either have kids that are in college now, you will have kids that are in college, or you're in college right now. So you could use the institution's money to make that happen. You got to live somewhere. So that appreciation will allow you to do that. So when Vlad is saying that it's not the play, I'm saying that depends on where you are in life, right, or what your strategy is. So if you're a college student and you're struggling, or you're, you know, down in your luck and you're struggling, that appreciation can get you there. At some point, it's going to appreciate. So that's one thing.
I love it.
And then two, I could kind of agree with them where your primary residence, if you're a high net worth, doesn't make sense. However, you could have a multi. You can live in one of them, and now you're living free. It's the same thing, you know.
All smart plays. Nah, it makes sense. I got to get up because it's great, brother. Nah, I love that perfect example. And the thing that I'm hearing consistently for both of you when it comes to this, you know, what questions can I ask about investing? At the end of the day, like you said, Michael was in the markets. That's where he chose to be an expert at. So that's why that's his preference. But like you said, to the individual, the biggest thing is not to – I would say for anybody listening is if you're thinking about getting into some type of investments or whatever, not to generalize about what's best. That's the thing that I'm consistently hearing at the end of the day. Find the thing that interests you, learn that thing, and get smart about your strategy, because at the end of the day, it's not that one investment in itself is better than one or the other. But again, wanted to definitely have that dialogue. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think.
Hey, are you a wine drinker?
A little bit here and there, but my wife definitely loves hers. Why you ask?
Man, you gotta try this vegan wine by Sip and Share Wines. I ran across them at this event in Atlanta, and now I keep me a few bottles at the house. What flavor you like?
I like me a good red or maybe a nice dipping deal or something. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, try this sweet red first.
That's nice and smooth right there. Yeah, that's
kind of
sweet like I like it. You know what I'm talking about?
For sure. That's why I like that one as well. Hey, now try this Conjure Zinfandel. This one was featured in Forbes magazine as a top 10 drink for the summer. See what you think.
Oh, okay. Now that's fire right there. Where can I get a bottle of that?
Just go to sipandsharewines.com. They'll ship it right to your door. They black on, too.
Oh, yeah? Okay, you said what? Sipandsharewines.com? Is that it?
Yep.
Okay, now you said that by investing in this fund, you'll get 8% back a year.
8% preferred return, correct.
Okay, but that's not guaranteed.
No investment's guaranteed. We have to say that. This is not a guaranteed investment, just as the stock market isn't a guaranteed investment.
Right, exactly. An 8% dividend is outstanding, but... You know, you're going to be hard-pressed to find anyone that'll bring you 8% a year consistently, year after year after year. You know, a few of those places do exist, but they haven't consistently kept that type of rate.
Well,
it's a very high rate.
That's my challenge, and that's what we want to live up to. We want to be one of the few economic vehicles and funds and firms that can produce those kind of investments. I believe with real estate, as we talked about last time, I believe with real estate, leverage right, that we can certainly meet those 8% marks. I believe so.
Now, with this fund, when you invest in it, you technically own a piece of the real estate that's purchased.
Correct.
Within that fund, but you don't actually have the tax advantages of owning actual real estate.
Yeah, there's not going to be the pass-through, the same type of like cost segregation and other pass-through that you would get from traditionally just owning it. So that is one component of it, correct.
Right. And, you know, essentially it's like a REIT. It's kind of a... You know, you're technically selling stocks at this point, right?
It's shares. Yep. It's shares of a company, and the company owns assets, and you own a piece of those assets.
Exactly. Now, if you decide to sell, you know, because if you buy a REIT and you say, okay, an hour later you change your mind, you can put it back on the market and sell it instantly, you know, if it's on a major exchange like the NASDAQ or the, you know, New York Stock Exchange. But
welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. Again, I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates. This morning's discussion question, can you answer my questions about investing? And I want to take a quick turn here. Again, as you hear another cut from Vlad, he's speaking to a brother by the name of Jay Morrison. Don't know how familiar either of you are with that brother, but they're talking about the Tulsa Real Estate Fund. And, and Michael, I know you know something about that. And I really want to get into the REIT discussion, so glad to have John here, if we will, and we'll have him explain REITs, if you will. But I thought it was very necessary if we're going to have a conversation about investing. I love to highlight the fact that within this community, the intellectual outcasts that are listening in the Mental Dialogue Community Club, how adamant I am about bringing you vetted people who have professional license in what they do. And for anybody out there listening that may be familiar with the Tulsa Real Estate Fund and what's going on with it now, it's lost a lot of money, if you will, and you hear one J. Morrison, in a sense, trying to, in a sense, offer an 8% return, as you heard Vlad point out. Wow, that's a very good return, but he highlighted it would be hard-pressed to get that. And so at the time, a lot of hype pushed behind that fund, focusing on, in a sense, Black America coming together, and a lot of people joined that fund. I think $11 million was raised at one point some years ago, and now it's, I think, less than $500,000 in it. And so not to get into the particulars of Tulsa Real Estate, but I thought it was very necessary when we say, hey, answer my questions about investing. I think it's imperative. Before we get to the REIT discussion, if you will, and Michael, I'll let you jump in real quick first. I got another caller that wants to get in as well. I think it's very important that in people wanting to get into investing, or they understand that that's what the wealthy do, if you will, some of that same mindset stuff that Emil brought up actually plays a role in how someone, in a sense, in the role of a Jay Morrison, who's never, in a sense, controlled a fund of this nature, was able to convince people to get into investing. And Michael, I know that's one of your pet peeves, is watching people who are trying to take their hard-earned money, learn the idea of how to invest and make their money make money, and how easily and unfortunately people can take advantage of that mindset stuff that even Emil was talking about. So just your thoughts, again, not a particular attack on the individual, but just using that as an example of how we saw that happen, not only with, if you will, the Tulsa Real Estate Fund, but with a lot of the latest new gadgets that people want to jump into, as you know, John talked about it as well. If you jump from this, jump to that, jump to that. But a lot of times people's mindset allows them to get taken advantage of. Your thoughts, and then we'll get John talking about REITs as well. Go ahead, brother. I'm sorry.
Well, it gets into the psychology of it all. Like, most people think that money is about money. It's far from it. Money is about, again, the relationship you have with it, how you think about what you think about. And, you know, are you in touch with your emotional centers? Because believe it or not, you know, for us to take action, the most people have to have some sort of incentive. You know, once somebody gets excited about investing, as you hear, you know, that's in that initial phase. They want to believe, they're excited. And whatever piece of information that kind of hits on, you know, that place where they're excited becomes a point of confirmation. It becomes another thing to say, go and do. And it allows somebody who, like with Jay Morrison's story, and we could pick tons of names. We can go from Jay Morrison, but not all the way to Bernie Madoff. Let's not forget, you know, mm-hmm. the goat of shams is still was a Wall Streeter, you know. Absolutely. We talking to Jay doing something for $11 million, and again, it irks me because that's in my community. That's, he did it knowingly to me, to my community, whereas Madoff did it at a level higher at $50 billion, you know, and got even entire nations and banks and endowments and all these really smart people. But it highlights the point that it hurts us the most because we tend to have economically less assets. So whatever damage is done, it has a wider spread effect. But it's a very human thing to get your emotions involved, and part of your cognitive brain, the thing that says slow down and think about this, actually shuts down. This is something Absolutely. That, as a trader, we spend a lot of time trying to make sure that we're aware of, because you can't turn it off, but you can definitely massage it and learn about yourself and become more aware, such that you're able to come at something with a circumspect perspective and say, hey, I'm excited about this, but let me think about it. And that tends to be the difference.
No, absolutely. And, John, before we get into the REITs, just want to hear your thoughts as well, if you will, just from the perspective of when we hear these moments, and that's happening a lot online, like Michael said, plenty of names. Again, no focus on that particular individual. But unfortunately, when those type of things happen, or like I said, it doesn't seem that that's going to be a success at this point, or that they're going to be able to recover it, it actually makes it harder, in my opinion, for people like yourself who got into, if in your situation, the lending space for all the right reasons, if you will. It actually makes it difficult, in my opinion, for people in our community who are saying, look, I know I want to do something better with my money. It's almost like, we'll keep it under the mattress because they got burned someone who is by someone, in a sense, that's not vetted, if you will. So just your thoughts on that. And before we actually have you explain the REITs, I'm going to get the caller in as well. Go ahead, brother.
Sure, sure. It's a little bit of both, right? Meaning you got good cops, you got bad cops. You can't paint one picture, you know, with one brush. So, I think the conversations have to be had at home or in our community or in small groups like this, because you're not taught this at school. Most people go to school for 12 years. It's never taught to you. So I agree. You have to have the conversation. It is emotional because you're talking about your future. You're talking about your finances. However, I think it does take discipline, which you have to learn over time, to not be emotional about investments. So in this conversation, it's, you know, there's a line. I can hear it in Michael's voice that he has that discipline, and you have to in his industry and in most industries. But for people that are new in anything, it's emotional. You're doing it because you like it. You're doing it because you love it. So you have to do some additional education, some additional vetting to find not just the right answer, but the right answer for you. And that goes back to that strategy again, of course. But I think that's a lot of what.
No, that makes sense. Let me jump to this caller real quick. No, I love it, brother. No, that makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. Area code 910, last 3805. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your 3 cents or question on this morning's discussion. Thanks for getting in with us.
All right, this is Justin Hempstead.
Hey, what's up, brother? How you doing, King? Thanks for jumping in with us. What you got for us?
Well, this one is kind of, I guess, ask about the 8% return that we were just speaking of, how that can almost be like a dividend. Now, when it goes down to taxes, the dividends, they tend to be taxed around 15%, right, or 12 or 15%. How does that differ where the taxes aren't necessarily there for this 8%? As they would be if you were investing in a company that paid out the dividend.
That's a good question.
Yeah, go ahead, Michael. Go ahead and jump in there.
Oh, well, so for in investing in equities and things of that nature, one of the ways you can look at it is, and this is I'm not a tax expert, but I will tell you from looking at an investment that's in a stock, a bond, a mutual fund, a real estate investment trust, a REIT, or even more sophisticated things like a managed account or private equity, things of that nature, there are ways to shield or to defer taxes. But then there's other things as well that you can do. You know, there's certain things like wash sales, which are generally prohibited, but there's a lot of tax treatment that will go into say either you're going to be taxed at a long-term capital gain like that 15%, or you could be taxed at a blended rate like for a certain, and I'm not going to speak specifically on it, but certain derivatives, if you trade in and out of the markets on them, instead of having a, you know, taxed at regular ordinary income, wherever your tax bracket is, progressively speaking, or taxed at a capital gains rate, you can be taxed at a blended rate, which is somewhere in between, and it's kind of a wide range of 38% all the way down to a, you know, 15%, you're really in the middle where it's like 60, 40 short long where you can be taxed at 23%. But if you take that, you know, if you're in those markets or in those types of investments and all this, again, if none of this makes sense, it's because it's a level of awareness that's required here. You have to know what's out there before you can answer these questions. But given that, you can get rates much closer to that dividend rate, some right on that dividend rate, or for certain investments in certain investment vehicles like long-term accounts, those ERISA accounts, like IRAs, your 401ks, you know, if it's a Roth, you can actually get those taxes on those gains negated. Now, granted, the trade-off is you can't touch it before 59.5. So taxes becomes it's a great question because it opens up, but taxes is a very broad subject. I think people spend a lot of time being nervous about taxes instead of just doing the work. And I'd much rather you get started saving and investing and getting in there and then figuring out the taxes, because that's exactly what I did. I wanted to go first. Mm-hmm. I figured out the taxes later. Pay your taxes and keep going.
No, I like it. We're up against the top of the hour. Justin, we will keep you on to continue this conversation. So appreciate you for calling in. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think.
Hey, where did you get that hat and t-shirt? I like that.
Oh, I got this at moneymotivation.com. It's fresh, right?
Yes, and I love the message on it, too. You are the hustle, huh?
That's what the shirt says. I am the hustle. They embody the entrepreneurial spirit, and what I like the most, it's more than a brand. It's a lifestyle for those who want to put in the work and expect to have the finer things in life. I also follow them on Instagram. Check this post out.
If you believe money is the root of all evil, you're using it wrong?
Or how about this one? Excuses made $0 an hour.
I like those. What's their IG?
At moneymotivation.co.
But do they have any ladies' gear?
Yes, you're going to love the clothing line they got for the ladies. Matter of fact, pull up their website, moneymotivation.com, and I'm going to get you a few things so we can both look like money.
Everywhere I go, go, and everywhere I be, I don't even talk, talk, they still know it's me, because I look like money.
Psychologist Dr. Gerald Hassel and Omar Buckner, founders of Self Mastery Retreats International, is proud to present a transformative experience specifically designed by black men for black men. This immersive retreat offers a unique opportunity for black men to forge deep bonds, enhance their personal growth, and empower themselves to create positive change in their lives, families, and communities. For 5 days in the sacred surroundings of Puerto Morales, Mexico, a select group of powerful black men will embark on a journey of self-discovery, creating a safe and supportive space to share their experience and build a strong sense of community. This trip will truly transform your life and takes place February the 15th through 19th, 2024. If interested, text SELFMASTERY to 678-548-2456. Again, that is SELFMASTERY to 678-458-2456 to receive a direct link for the retreat.
So my goal is to show you what you need to do to be able to make $1,000 in a day on demand, even though I know it sounds like a scam.
You don't find that suspicious. You don't find that suspicious. You don't find that suspicious.
Even though I know it sounds like a scam.
If you follow my two-step system, you will be able to start in 4 weeks making money. And I discovered this the hard way, so you guys get to cheat and have it the easy way. Do you want an easy way that would allow you to be profitable in a month if you do the work, or would you rather do it and take years to be able to make money?
Ain't that funny? Ain't it funny how everybody's an expert but ain't got shit to show for their expertise?
With other programs, it would take you 30 trades to make 10K. But with my system, it will only take 6 trades.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates. This morning's discussion question, can you answer my questions about investing? Special guest, Chief Investment Officer Michael Suttler, as well as Senior Leading Consultant John McGee. At the end, you hear a cut. It's Brother Ian Dunlap highlighting getting into trading and making $1,000 a day. We see these shiny things on the internet all the time. And Michael, I know for a fact they run you hot because
man.
You talk about your own story of, you know, what, you know, in a sense, what you had to do to even get to this space. But let me highlight something about, for example, the question that we got from Justin, who I still have on, if you will, and you were just kind of highlighting all the taxes. And I love how at the end you said, you know what, I jumped in. By jumping in, I had to figure out these things. So it sounded pretty sophisticated what you were able to answer that question. And so I'm sitting here listening and thinking about the psychology of someone who may be looking to step into investing or not sure what they know. And so you sound so versed. I actually get how listening to you prior to the break, actually, again, you are a vetted person who's been in this space for, as you say, about to be 18 years now, helping people invest their money. So you are a vetted person who people should listen to. But I get how the level of knowledge you have is quite intimidating comparing to the commercial I just heard for someone who calls himself a master investor who's going to somehow magically with their formula get you 10,000 in six trades versus the 30 trades it would typically take, right? That sounds good. And so I want to just keep harping on this mindset and how it becomes easy to get swayed by a quote-unquote master investor versus someone like you who's licensed to do what you do. So I just want to keep harping on that for anybody out there listening. The shiny tool ornament always sounds better and easier to jump into when you don't have the mindset. So I just feel like we have to reiterate that, if you will. So your thoughts on that, and I want to get Justin and Emil wants to get back in as well. Go ahead, brother.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, that I think you did that intentionally because you know that's like you said, that runs me, as my grandma used to say, 38 hot, because it plays upon these masters and gurus play upon what they know about humans. What they know about you is that if I talk a certain way, it sounds good to you. I mean, it's just like that, you know, that person in your ear at the bar, at the club or whatever, it sounds good to you. So no matter what happens, it's going to play. But here's the thing that always gets me about it. And I'm just talking to black people right now. Like, we tend to be very, you know, skeptical about lots of stuff. When that doggone vaccine came up, bruh, our entire community, I don't know. But why is it when somebody says $1,000 a day, but it's not a job? Oh, that sounds good. That why don't we take that same skepticism? And I ask that as a rhetorical question. The thing is, we should. You should vet me. You should be skeptical about me. You should be skeptical about anything that says I'm going to run you some coins, because I will tell you this, being in the industry, having gone from retail to professional, there's some dogs out here, some sharks out here. I would not give you the golden goose. I give you a couple of eggs, maybe, but I wouldn't give you the golden goose as some system that I'm gonna vet for you. And as a plug, that's why I started Blacks Academy. I know this is gonna sound like here's a hook, but I started Blacks Academy as a place to teach people how to learn about investing and trading for themselves. I wouldn't dare, partly because my licenses and stuff would get clapped, but I wouldn't dare tell somebody, oh, I'm going to make $1,000 a day, or I'm going to take from 30 trades to 6 trades. None of that stuff matters, because that's not how it's done anyway. I've been very successful at this, and I've had years where I didn't make a dime. So I'm not going to come out here and cap and be like, oh, well, I'm going to teach you something else. But again, my best secrets are still with me and mine. So keep that there. If you can learn, then you'll find your own best secrets as well. But we teach people how to learn about this stuff.
No, I love it. Let me go over to
– and it's a hard
John
sale.
No, absolutely. Let me jump over to John before I get to back to Justin and Emil. John, mentioning the REIT, again, this is an opportunity that some people have never heard. If you will, you know, in a sense, explain what the REIT is, and even, if you will, just a little comparison to – I don't know how much you know about the Tulsa Real Estate Fund, but in a sense, what's the difference? So for someone who, in a sense, may have went that route, they, in a sense, could have possibly easily just went to a viable REIT to actually get a consistent return, if you will. But if you will, explain that concept before we get to our callers.
Sure. So a REIT just stands for Real Estate Investment Trust. That allows you to do, it provides the investor with some type of liquidity where they can buy and sell shares, if you will, at any time. I think the next comparison to that would be like a syndication, right? So syndication, if you live in Atlanta or in any major city, when you see cranes going up and there's a large building, that didn't happen with someone having liquid cash to build that. They raised those funds. So both of these, a REIT or a syndication, allows you to raise the funds to complete a project. The funds got invested, the investors are going to get a return at the end of the project, typically. or if it's a building like a rental building, then they're going to make dividends over a period of time. That's how they get the profits out of it. So I'm not, obviously I know what the Tulsa project is. I'm not super versed in where they are currently versus where they were. Mm-hmm. But it's a REIT and syndication, these type of structures have been in place. They're just now, I think, popularized in our community. But these are things that have happened for forever, you know. And you go by some buildings and you see weeds coming up out of the concrete, meaning that typically it didn't work out, whatever the deal was. But that's just not plastered all over the internet. It just, for whatever reason, poor management, you know, the budgeting was off. So there's a lot of reasons why a project can fail, and that means that the investors lost their money. So like you said before, there's a risk in all of it. It's just that we glamorize the ones that make it, you know,
right.
And then the ones that don't, we hit them with the bat and say how horrible that were. But you got losing teams and you got winning teams. It's just, you know, it's a part of life.
Part of the game.
We just have to, it is. We just have to try to mitigate our risk and be prepared for the rainy day, quote unquote. That's what the old folks told us, right? So that rain is coming one day. The pandemic, that was the rainy day that nobody was prepared for, or not nobody, but a large
right.
Percent of the population, you know, we weren't prepared to sit at home and not be able to go to work, if you will. So
no, it makes sense. Makes sense. And I'll say, and a real quick thought on this, and I'm going to go back to Justin real quick. So personally, I'm not a homeowner, so, I'll say that. But I'm very interested in at least seeking out REITs in the sense of wanting to learn to get some money in real estate in a sense, since I am not necessarily an investor in a home like people that come to you looking for those loans or whatever. So, like you said, there are wins and losses. But just a quick thought of making people hear that that is a way to get invest in real estate, since we typically hear the wealthy are invested in real estate. They're invested in the market, and they typically, a lot of them will have businesses. So they usually take advantage of all three of the major ways to get wealthy in this country. And so for someone who hasn't necessarily learned or have time to get as versed on real estate as you, a REIT, in a sense, is a opportunity to, in a sense, invest in real estate, in a sense. Is that a fair – have I fairly surmised what that is in your opinion? Again, just a layman's version of what it is, then I'm going to jump to the caller.
Yes, you're asking me.
Yeah, I just want to see if I just want to say it in a very layman way that it's an opportunity to get into real estate, even if necessarily you're not trying to own the real estate yourself. So I just want to give that real simple clarity of how I see a REIT, and I wanted to make sure I was giving a fair definition, if you will.
I would say yes. If you saw a property for $100,000, and you, myself, Michael, the caller, Jeff. That's four of us. We found six other people. Each of us put $10,000 in, and we purchased this property for $100,000. This concept is just structured in different ways. Would be a REIT
nice.
Or a syndication. All 10 people aren't in there every day working on the project, managing the project. So there's somebody that's, you know, they're running the project, and then everybody else is kind of taking the back seat as an investor, if you will.
No, I love it. Justin, real quick, we've got about a couple of minutes before the next break, Justin, if you will. But I do know enough about you. You're one of my Black Level members. You're always encouraging people to jump into real estate from that standpoint. Maybe give some insight from your perspective, having been that you are an investor, if you will. But I also know you've done it the way that John just mentioned as well. Go ahead, brother.
All right. I appreciate that. Going back to the discussion on the REIT, I'm actually very impressed with it, because I guess a lot of times we get involved in the market, but we don't necessarily have the people in our circle who are going to help us form a REIT. So when that's the case, especially our very own, I'm not trusting him with my money. Why am I giving him $10,000? He might try and cut me out. He might do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We have all these negative thoughts. So how do we get past the negativity and understand that it is an investment? And with it being an investment, you are at risk. So that being the case, I mean, of course, you have legal documentation and things that you put in place when you're investing with the REIT. I'm actually working on a project right now, and I think I have two so far, but We're looking at some other members to come on board, but this is a development. We're developing a community, you know, for veterans. So, of course, if you had a REIT, you know, that REIT will be able to help you get access to the funds needed. But this is what I want to say. How can you go about, or is it best to go about bringing in other investors in a REIT, but after you've already put in money to get things, you know, get the ball up and moving? I'm sure it makes it easier, but if you don't have any of your capital tied into it up front, can someone answer that for me?
John, that sounds like something you could answer. Go ahead, brother.
You said you already have the project up and running, and now you're trying to turn it into a REIT or bring a REIT to the project?
I'm trying to bring the REIT to the project because we need more capital. It's a $40 million project. However, you know, the land has been purchased outright, and, you know, now they're doing the engineering studies and things, but it makes more sense, or does it, if you don't have that capital, because, you know, that costs, that you have, your pockets have to, you know, take a hit when you're bringing in engineers and people tell you where you can build, where you can't, you know.
So I believe it is possible. I'm not as versed on that side of the formation of the REIT, just being quite candid with you. We can definitely talk offline. I have some individuals that we can speak with, you know, to figure it out. Otherwise, typically it would just be raising capital, you know, from the form of what's it called with tech companies? How they do crowdfunding. It's basically like crowdfunding. Which, you know, you're laying out what the project looks like. You're laying out what the buy-in is, and then what that time frame is to get a return on it. That's all it is. So I'm saying it doesn't necessarily have to be a REIT. It could be, but at the end of the day, you're just raising funds to complete the project.
Okay. All right.
I love that. Dialogue and connect is what we do best. So, Justin, I will make sure you get, both of y'all get each other's information. We're not just a talk show. We are literally here to connect us each other to do business. Anytime you hear these negative thoughts about what the black community should be doing or what they shouldn't be doing, I love to highlight that every Saturday morning we're doing the opposite of that BS. And so love it when we have on-air connections. And so, Justin, I would definitely get you in direct contact because, as John and Michael both said from the very beginning, if they don't have the answer, they will get you the answer. So I do love that. I did let the break extend because I wanted to make sure you were able to get that question answered. Justin, do you have anything else? Because I'm going to get a meal in here, but I want to make sure I got all your stuff in before I go to this break.
Yes, I think I'm good now. Just like to look forward to connecting with John.
All right, I definitely get y'all connected. We'll be right back, and we'll get Emil back in after this break. All I ask is that you think.
What happens when your customers call your business and you're too busy to answer or call them back in a timely manner? You lose that business. Shockingly, 61% of inbound calls go unanswered. But fear not. TCHmedia.ai is here to change the game. We specialize in capturing, nurturing, and converting your prospects into loyal customers. With our state-of-the-art communication solutions, no interaction will be left behind. When you miss a call, we've got you covered with automatic, engaging texts that keep your prospects connected and eager to choose you over your competitors. Don't let potential customers slip away. Make the smart choice with TCHmedia.ai and skyrocket your conversions today. TCHmedia.ai is here to change the game.
You guys have friends who do stocks, or you've been watching the news, or been on social media. It seems like somebody is talking about stocks all the time. Maybe a friend you know might have said, I made X amount of dollars off of this trade, or made this much percent on this stock. So what do? You download an app, you buy your first stock, and all of a sudden that stock may not do well. In the back of your mind, you're thinking, I'm investing into this company. And some of you guys, you have no idea why you're investing into it. You just hear about it from your friends. You bought that stock, and that stock is in the red. So there are people who make a lot of money, and there are people who lose a lot of money. And so you're wondering, should I trade, or should I invest, or what is the difference? So first, I want to go over what's considered long-term investing. I believe that it's buying into companies and holding them long-term, depending on how long you choose, regardless of the short-term volatility and price action. In your long-term portfolio, you can have a mix of mutual funds, index funds, ETFs, and single stocks. And when it comes to trading, people usually like to trade single stocks and ETFs. Now, when it comes to trading, there's a lot of different ways and strategies you can trade, but the two most common ones are swing trading and day trading. Swing trading is when you buy into a stock and you hold that stock for a couple days, weeks, months, and then you'll sell it for a profit or possibly even a loss. Day trading, on the other hand, is buying a stock and selling that exact same day, holding no overnight positions. An example I can use is through an Apple stock. I have Apple stocks within my Roth IRA and my long-term investment portfolio, and I consistently buy into them without ever planning to sell them, unless they come out with really, really bad news and the company is losing value. At the same time, in my trading account, sometimes I like to buy Apple stocks and hold it for a couple days, maybe make a 5% gain, and then sell it. Or I'll buy Apple stock when it's down 2%, and then maybe throughout the day, it'll go back up 2%, and then I'll sell it. Hope that made sense.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates. This morning's discussion question, can you answer my questions about investing? Our special guest, Chief Investment Officer for SC Capital, Michael Sutler, as well as Senior Lending Consultant, John McGee for VI Capital Lending. And I play a cut that distinguishes, because again, we use this word investing, and sometimes people don't understand the distinction between investing and trading. So if you will, Michael, that's in your wheelhouse. And so anything that's in addition that you want to highlight, and then I want to get to Emil. But I just thought it was very necessary to make that distinction, because somebody new to this sometimes doesn't understand one, you know, that difference. And I also would like to highlight that Blacks Academy, which people are going to hear a little bit even more about here later in the show. But you are very versed, from what I understand, in teaching people the difference, and based on their perspective, you can help them learn the difference between investing and trading. But anything that you want to highlight about that difference, just so that we give as much clarity to anyone listening.
It's cliche, but you know, the best investment is one in education. But I'm not necessarily talking about degrees. I'm not necessarily underplaying those too, because that did factor into my entire path. But you know, it's funny, we see certain words in certain domains, like investing, and we think it's all broad, it's all the same, or if I go back home or talk to people where I'm from, it's like investing is gambling. You know, there are similarities in a lot of things, but you wouldn't want, for example, a podiatrist to do an open heart surgery for you. That's a cardiologist, even though they're both doctors. So in that same vein, when you break down investing and financial operations in general, sure, investing is, you know, putting money or capital towards something in hopes that it gets some return in the future. Trading is a much more active engagement, in which it's closer to an actual job. That as an investor, I don't put on my job hat. As a trader, which again, that's where my license is, I'm actually a trading advisor. I handle people's money in the markets along with my own, because I believe in skin in the game. But that active engagement, I'm making decisions on a short-term basis. It's not all day trading or swing trading. It's, you know, we bring it broad to keep it general so that you get the concept. But one of the things I make a distinction is, I think just about everybody that can save should invest, because one thing we've kind of talked around it, was that you're investing to at least preserve or grow value or equity in what you have. But trading is an active engagement in the market to where you're saying, I have skill and luck enough to get in and out of this market based on my skill and luck and timing, such that I can make profits actively. And I will tell you, just like I say, everybody I think that can save can invest. I think most people should not, cannot trade, and I am a trader. But that's how I know, because most of the people that started with me back in 2005 are not doing this. I'm part of a very small group, and it's because I love it. There's tons of other ways to make money than trading. You can make a lot of money trading, but you can also make no money, or even worse, you can lose a lot of money, as most people found out in 2022. A lot of people made a lot of money not knowing what they were doing, not actually understanding the dynamics, just going along with the herd, but when the herd changes mind, and that liquidity trap happened, everybody thought, you know, everybody was Chicken Little, thought the sky was falling, whereas traders like myself and others, we had a boom year last year. It's definitely a difference.
No, glad to clarify that. And from what I understand, from what I can see out there, when it comes to trading specifically, like you said, that day-to-day active trading, like you say, which is, as you say, putting on your work hat, 85% of traders actually lose money. So, again, you are in that unique space that you've been able to make a living doing this for a number of years now. But I definitely want to make that distinction because, as you said, the words are used broadly, and a lot of times people will fall for those traps, the $1,000 a day traps.
Right.
Promising too much without realizing that particular aspect of investing, very few people make money. Let me get
right.
To
it's not a salary.
Oh, yeah, go ahead, brother. Yeah, please go ahead.
Yeah, I was just saying it's not a salary at all. It's one of those things, and it's not 85. It's actually closer to 95% if you look at it long term. One interesting thing about the United States is that as the United States total population has grown, the percentage of people that's trader is still the same.
That's real. Nah, I love that. Matter of fact, Emil, I got a new caller that wants to jump in since you've been on. I'm going to get back to you in a second. Sorry if I'm interrupting your thought or if it applies, but I'm going to go ahead and get 619 in here, 334. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your 3 cents or question on this morning's discussion.
All right. Good morning, Montoya. This is Donald Atchison again.
Oh, what's up, King? Oh, man, that's back. Hey, back-to-back Saturdays. I'm doing something right. If I get you smart, brother.
Hey, man, you're your subject matters, man, they keep getting my attention. You know, I've been an investor all of my life. I've never had to have a job as an adult, and I haven't.
No.
There is a huge difference between trading and investing. I don't have the guts to trade, and it's not in my personality. It's just not me. Those guys are gunslingers. I'm a different kind of gunslinger. So I'm in position now to where I could have retired at 29 years old. I chose to continue to do what it is that I do because I enjoy it, but now that I'm at 52, I'm starting to even decrease my investment strategy I'm more on the level now where I'm trying to preserve what it is that I built and make it automated, more automated, like my businesses. I'm trying to have less of an active role. But what I did in the very beginning was invest, and what I did was I learned early how to use other people's money and how to get the bank to do things that I wanted them to do without having to qualify. And it's not as hard as some people think. Like, for instance, most bank managers have autonomy. They have the ability to be able to make a decision without oversight up to a particular dollar amount. So what does that mean? It means that technically you don't have to have capital. You don't have to have credit. You don't have to have assets to be able to close a deal. And that's because they have a general amount of ability to be able to say yes regardless of those things and regardless of any particular oversight. It takes relationships. So I learned early it's about the relationship I have with the bank manager that can get things done, the relationship I have with the person who's selling me their property. So I don't like to 20 years, and it's because I take my time, maybe one property a year, maybe one property every other year, and what I look for is that perfect storm, a person that wants to sell, can sell, they don't owe anything on their property, and they're willing to carry. And so once I have all of that, I have a deal. That means I can negotiate just about anything I want. The only thing that I don't have is trust. They don't know me. They don't trust, so I help them to do that. I help them to trust. I help them to see what it is that I've acquired and how it is that I do business. And that allows me to go after properties without any money out of my pocket. And then I grew into, like one brother said something about needing $40 million. That's way out of my range. My net worth right now is about $6 million. I don't owe anything on anything. But I don't deal with $40 million deals, so it's just out of my range. But when you're talking about $1 million deal, $500,000 deal, that's what I've done all of my life. Now, like my pool of friends together, we're probably worth that, but that's still out of our range. First thing I've learned how to do is stay within my with what it is that I do. Some people will throw a cryptocurrency at me. They'll throw this. They'll throw development. It's not what I do. And I've never been the type of person to go outside of what I do when it comes out to making money. Why? Because I'm stable. I'm comfortable. And I have it to where I have generational wealth. That's one of the biggest cues. when you're new to the game, don't jump on and after everything that you see just because it makes money for someone else. And most of the people that are coming at you trying to throw things at you, cryptocurrency, development, real estate investment trust, et cetera, some of them aren't even making money. What it is, they're new to the game. They're like a new Christian. They want to tell you about Jesus Christ, but they haven't really lived the life that walked yet themselves. So I learned how to also attach myself to people who make more money than me. So in order for me to listen to you when it comes down to a subject matter, if it's money, my first thing was, okay, you have to at least be at the $250,000 revenue a year mark, because that puts you in the top 5% of the income earners in the country. Once I started making that myself, my next goal was, okay, in order to listen to you, you have to be making at least twice what I'm making. In order, because you know what you're talking about. You've proven. So people take mentors, right, and in reality, they're cronies. They're people just like them. They're just more motivated. They have a little bit more spiel in how they say things. But they're not really people that should be your mentors. So I take, and I still have mentors today. So I just wanted to share that. I wanted to say that don't be afraid of risk. I've lost money, but because of my attitude of let's do it again, I've made way more money than I lost, and it's worth the trip. But, you know, I don't like Donald Trump, what he said when it comes down to not everybody can invest and succeed. And the reason why I think that that's a true statement is because not everybody is willing to take it on the chin. Not everybody is willing to risk what it is that they have. They want to work, and there's nothing wrong with working. I say be a super employee. Put your maximum towards that 401k. Buy your home. Pay it off. Don't use credit cards so much. Take some money and put it aside and then make small little investments in the stock market using qualified people who are able to take and make your money multiply. So you may not be an outright investor. You may be an employee, but put some of that money to work. You may be a self-employed, but put some money to work. So that's just my 10 cents for the day. And brother, I appreciate some of your topics, man. They're just really on point.
I appreciate the call, man. You gave us 4 cents. Well, as you said, 10 cents. Thank you so much. We are up against the break. Appreciate the call, Emil. I will definitely get to you out of this next break. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think.
Hey, are you a wine drinker?
A little bit here and there, but my wife definitely loves hers. Why you ask?
Man, you got to try this vegan wine by Sip and Share Wine. I ran across them at this event in Atlanta, and now I keep me a few bottles at the house. What flavor you like?
I like me a good red or maybe a nice dipping deal or something. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. Try the sweet red first.
Okay. That's nice and smooth right there. Yeah, that's kind of sweet like I like it. You know what I'm talking about?
For sure. That's why I like that one as well. Hey, now try this Conjure Dipping Deal. This one was featured in Forbes magazine as a top 10 drink for the summer. See what you think.
Oh, okay. Now that's fire right there. Where can I get a bottle of that?
Just go to sipandsharewines.com. They'll ship it right to your door. They black on too.
Oh, yeah? Okay, you said what? Sipandsharewines.com? Is that it?
Yep.
Bad.
About a 30K investment, and that 30K investment would generate 75K in sales, about 25K a month. So if we just looked at that 30K investment that was needed, three options to do it. I could self-fund it, which up to that point I had done entirely. I had self-funded the entire launch of the company and the operations of the company up to that point. Second option was to give out equity to somebody who wanted to invest in the business. I had several people who had asked me about it in starting the business and when it was going in the first 2 years. And a third option was to do some debt financing or business financing. So my thought process was this. I didn't want to give out a small piece of equity. I don't like the idea of giving up a piece of ownership or control to somebody else, even if it's a small piece necessarily, when I don't have to. Because I could have self-funded it, so that wasn't really an option. Self-funding it was on the table, but I preferred to stay liquid. So we had a proven track record of sales. I could predict that we were getting, you know, based on what we were currently getting, that if we invested 30 grand, we could generate about 75K, so the better option was to debt finance it and stay liquid with my own capital. So I went and did two things. Got a line of credit that could be accessed monthly for working capital, and then the second thing I did was go to one of my banks that I had a relationship with, got a short-term business loan for a little over 30K. Invested that money in the marketing and inventory, and within 3 months, we hit 25K per month in sales and climbing, and we haven't looked back since. So that debt financing drove business growth. We had predicted sales. We understood the math, and we invested it in the right place, and we hit that mark in climbing at that point in particular. In 3 months after that investment was made, we hit 25K per month, and it kept increasing after that. The other thing to point out about that scenario that I think is important from my perspective is I tend to be more risk-taker, more of a risk-taker than most people, and I don't like money sitting idle. So I had the cash to invest it, but I don't like keeping a ton of cash. So even though I did the debt financing in this example and I chose not to self-finance, I still took my own cash and put it in play in other areas of the business and or other investments. So I put that money in play that I had to generate some type of return where essentially now I had two potential lines of future revenue that could be generated versus one. So the advantage for me of choosing the debt financing in that case is I had two lines, myself funding money that I can use in places, plus the debt financing to put in play to get some type of return.
Yeah, that's beautiful. So you're basically creating two streams by not sitting on the cash, because I would have assumed you didn't use your cash and would have sat on it and kept it liquid. You stayed liquid having access, but then you put it to work. So beautiful, beautiful example.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates. This morning's discussion question, can you answer my questions about investing? Special guests, Michael Sutler as well as John McGee, both versed in investing, Michael specifically in the markets, John in the real estate area. As you just hear a cut from the CEO of Money Motivation, one of our longtime sponsors of this show. You heard the commercial at the top of the hour. But I wanted to highlight is you hear Mark Ranger break down his investment within his business. And it's only right that if we're going to talk about investing, again, you have to touch the three areas in which people get wealthy, which is stocks or the markets, real estate, and business. And business is where you can see high return as you hear him go through a specific example. And, John, before we get to Emil, I figured some of what you just heard, I know it's your first time hearing that, is music to your ears with you being in the lending space, and you hear this CEO break down why he did what he did, but he also kept some money to be liquid, but he didn't keep it just to keep it. He actually put it into play. And so it forces us to talk about the diversification that is required whatever investing one that you're going to do. And it would only be right, again, that we talk about this conversation about the business aspect, because if you are in the 11% of Americans who are full-time entrepreneurs, there's a lot more return if you can be successful in business. Not easy to be successful in business, but a lot of times they're not just using their own money. That can actually strap you and keep you from scaling. So I know I said a lot there, brother, but yeah, if you will, just kind of jump in where you're fitting in reference to this morning's discussion.
Absolutely. So that was very enlightening. I love what you said. I agree 100%. For the most part, we talk about, you know, other people's money, right, to make our business work. But then there's the other side of it, you know, the reserve that you have or the savings that you have, you being that as well. So in the lending space, I do both of that. I help people that are looking for funds, like my friend that called in to complete his project. But then there's individuals on the other side. You know, there's brothers that they have a significant 401k and they want to get a higher return on that. So they pull it and lend that money out to make a greater return and then, you know, put it back in their 401k. And then another thought that I had while he was speaking, Michael brought it up earlier. All of this planning that we're talking about as far as investing and creating a return, obviously you have to stay alive today. But it's for the future. So whether you're working a job, whether you're an entrepreneur, in your early years, you probably, you know, you don't want to work that hard. So you definitely don't want to do it in your 70s and 80s. So I'm saying all that to say, if you have a job, somebody's doing it for you. You got a 401k. Hopefully you're contributing to it. But especially as an entrepreneur, I think you have to have some type of investment strategy, whether that's real estate, whether that's stocks. But for the future, at some point, you're not going to be able to work, whether you're 70, 80, 90, or living a lot longer. My uncle's going to be 99 next month.
So wow.
The purpose, I'm saying, of all of, yeah, it's a blessing. the purpose of all of this is for that, you know, for that, that rainy day in the future when you cannot go to work. You know, hopefully you don't want to go to work after 60-something, but at some point you won't be able to go to work, but you still got to eat. You still got to pay the light bill, you know. Hopefully your house is paid off, your car is paid off, blah, blah, blah. But you got to go to the doctor, you got to eat, you got to pay property tax. So I'm just saying that dialogue that he was speaking at, that made me really think about the reason why we're investing.
No, it makes sense. And part of, and I'm about to bring Emil back on, but part of the concept that Emil brought in reference to our mindset and when it comes to, in a sense, why we don't invest, another aspect is, unfortunately, remaining income focused. And I think that's what you're somewhat alluding to there, John. It's generally speaking, we're always looking, well, how do I get more income versus learning the game to understand how investing, as you said, will make money for us and help, in a sense, return, give us a return when we can't work any longer. All right, Brother Emil, sorry to keep you on hold for so long. What you got for us, King?
Yeah, you know, beautiful discussion. Everything that these brothers are saying, especially the caller, I think his name was Justin, not Justin, but the other brother who talked about his investment strategy was actually brilliant. We got to learn how to grow into the mindset, and this is the part that I think a lot of times we miss. What does grow mean? I'm going to be very specific in this case. When we go from rent to buy, the growth has to be the calculation that goes from rent to buy. A buyer of a home that you live in can't just say, well, my rent's X and my mortgage is X, therefore I'm going to buy a home. You have to consider how much is maintenance and upkeep and then the catastrophic failure of things like a roof after a hailstorm or HVAC system. If you're not considering all of those costs as part of the cost of ownership of a home, then you're an immature or yet-to-be-seasoned home buyer. You haven't thought through all the things that impact your home's the ability to manage that home and take care of it financially. The rent-to-buy transition should be more robust in order to help us learn how to grow as a thinking individual toward the purposes of greater investment later. In other words, if I could put my mind to work today on the transition from rent to buy my personal home, my domicile, then I can start to think through investment in that same light. What are the things I need to do to go from being an employee who invests in a 401k into an individual investor who buys stock or ETF retail? And then we can start to grow our mindset, our vocabulary, and our understanding using these transitions in life. So we can be very deliberate and we can start to be more practical about what it means to grow into these phases of development. And that's where Michael was very clear about his past, where he's like, I jumped in with both feet to learn taxes. Well, he made a decision prior to that that he was mature enough to ask the question, how do I pay taxes if I make money from these investments? He didn't know, but he was willing to learn. Those are the kind of mature thoughts we need to be able to grow into over time. And that's the concern that I want us to address actively and consciously. This very specific day-by-day, year-over-year process of growing and maturing from, oh, I rent my house to I buy my house. Oh, I am a 401k. I have a 401k. I don't even know what's in it. I just know I have one. Two, I know what's in it. Two, I'm an individual investor. Two, perhaps being a some sort of more savvy or more sophisticated investor. That day-by-day growth has to be deliberate. Otherwise, we'll miss the opportunity and we'll be in our 80s without the tools we need to be able to walk away from active work and still have a passive income.
Preach.
Beautiful.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Now, that's real. That's real. So thank you for that 3 cents, King. Again, we're just having this robust conversation. I actually got a personal question I hope to ask, but I want to necessarily go ahead and jump to this last break. So for real out there, we got to take care of our sponsors. So thank you to Money Motivation,
TCH Media, Sip and Share Wines, all of our sponsors, and another longtime sponsor, LNG Technologies. Let me go to take care of them for making sure that this Return of Intelligent Radio stays on the air. So we'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think.
LNG Technology Services, we are your industry leader in aircraft and heavy equipment repair services. In commercial business for over 15 years, LNG technicians have over 150 years of equipment-specific knowledge and are known industry-wide for returning worn-out, broken, and overused ground support equipment back to the user in working better than new conditions. For a service job done right at a value unparalleled in the industry, contact LNG Technology Services at 478-781-4860. Again, for a service job done right, that number is 478-781-4860. LNG Technologies is a Mental Dialogue Gold member and proud sponsor of the Mental Dialogue community.
Are you serious about learning how to earn significant income on a regular basis as a trader or investor in the U.S. stock or foreign exchange markets? If so, you may be the perfect student to learn technical analysis for trading or investing at the Blacks Academy. With over 15 years of experience in investment strategies, here's what a current student recently said about his experience at Blacks Academy.
Yeah, this class has been excellent, and I've had a lot of experience trading, but this is the most exposure that I've had to breaking down the theory behind TA. I'm really excited to continue the journey.
For a similar experience, don't allow new traders with overnight success to promise you riches they can't deliver on. Instead, learn the foundations of trading and investing the right way at Blacks Academy. To learn more, visit them at blacks.academy online. That's BLAXE.academy, or search for Blacks Academy on YouTube.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates. This morning's discussion question, can you answer my questions about investing? Special guests, Michael Sutler, SC Capital Management, as well as John C. McGee, VI Capital Lending. And we can't go any further. We keep highlighting Blacks Academy. We got actually one of your students also on the line, if you will, Michael.
But before we bring them on,
You know, we've done shows highlighting you launching Blacks Academy, and it's going well from what I understand. And I will be very intentional, especially if you're a new listener. This is not just a radio show. This is all attached to our community club, where we attempt to be a virtual nationwide neighborhood where African Americans learn to trade ideas, goods, and services through actual live meetups, social media, and this podcast. And so if you are a new listener, I don't mind highlighting when somebody's out here doing it correctly that has been vetted, 18 years in the game, if you will, 13 years in business from what I understand. Michael, if you will, tell them about Blacks Academy, and we'll get your student on as well. Matter of fact, I'll go ahead and bring the student on. Let's get their name, and then you can get that information. I got 850-945. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and we'll get your testimony in a second here. I just want to let Michael know you're on with us.
Good morning. My name is Kendrick Roberts. I'm from Tallahassee, Florida.
Brother. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, no. I was just going to say I've been a Blacks Academy student for about a year and a half now.
Oh, my God, I didn't realize it was that long since we did your show, man. It's been that long?
Yeah, it's been that long.
Oh, man.
Not a time, man.
But now, go ahead and tell them about it, and then we'll get Kendra's testimony. But go ahead and tell them about Blacks before we get his testimony.
Okay, so just to start, man, I told you guys the motivation was sitting at home thinking about what I was seeing in my community, thinking also about, you know, the successes that I've had, the troubles that I've had, you know, starting going from a retail investor, trader, to, you know, again, getting to that, like one of the guys mentioned, an accredited investor where you're over a certain level of understanding and assets, where I was like, okay, is this where I made it? And then I had a lot of friends that were like, no, this isn't even the top. So the thinking about all of this and thinking about what we needed in our community, I felt like the way that I can make the most impact was impart my story, not just by telling the story, but I, as a self, and again, people ask me all the time, who were my mentors in trading? As no one. I'm what's called an autodidact. I self-learn. Hopefully that comes across in the way I teach her, but I teach, but I do by, I learn by doing, and then also taking it back and coming up with theories and formulas and sort of that sort of thing. And long and short, Blacks Academy is the love child, the brainchild, if you will, of this. I wanted to give the community of something that I did not have. Like I said, I kind of did it all, I wouldn't say all alone, because I don't, you know, think anybody does anything alone necessarily, but I didn't have a community to kind of go along with me. I had people who would evangelize for a time, but they would fall out. But what I was doing is I broke trading down into several areas. First of all, we always talk about technical analysis, but we go beyond that into the actual macroeconomics of it all, and then into intermarket analysis, because these are things that we use as professionals to make the decision where you're pressing the button to make a trade because you heard something. We spend more time researching than we do in front of the screen. We spend more time charting and talking about it. And what I wanted to do was impart that to students who had the drive, the mindset, the motivation to say, I really want to learn how to do this stuff. We said, okay, well, we're going to create a community, an online community, that is not just feel good, but you're going to get some actionable skills if you spend the time with us in the community. So,
no, I love it. Let's get to your students. Actually, we got two students on the line. Let me highlight the other one as well, and we'll just get a quick thought from both of them. I got 256 last 3977.
Oh, I know that one.
Okay. All right. So, just introduce yourself, and then we're going to go back to Kendra just to give a testimony from both of y'all. I just want to introduce you. 977, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Good morning. My name is Barnetta, and I am calling here, calling from Huntsville, Alabama.
I love it. All right, Kendrick, if you will, man, just give us a quick thought. You say you've been doing it for a year and a half. I'm interested in hearing this because, again, I've known, you know, just to give people my background with Michael, we went to the same school. I'm a couple of years ahead of him, same college, the Air Force Academy out in Colorado, whatever. But I've always loved to bring Michael on for these particular conversations. So he's been a longtime guest. But I haven't heard from someone actually going through the school and what it's been like. But we highlighted when he launched it. Again, I didn't realize it was over a year ago. But Kendra, just what's been your experience with Blacks Academy? If you can just give a brief testimony, and then we're going to go back to Bernetta.
Okay, no problem. I'll make it quick. Well, I was introduced to Mike through another group that I was in. And one of the principles that he teaches, the Elliott Wave theory, which was something that, funny to say, my wife the one started talking about it to me. And I was trying to learn it on my own at the time. And it was hard to find somewhere online a good resource to be able to learn it. And then when I heard Mike talking about it, I was like, okay, I got to join this group because he sounded like he knows what he's talking about. Like the way how he teaches, how he delivers, because he's honest up front. He tell you things that you probably don't want to hear, but you need to hear. But, you know, those things help you grow. And, you know, him and his team, they very responsive with answering questions that you may have, analyzing the charts that you post online. And with the study sessions they offer, they go into the why behind the market. A lot of places, you know, just show you how to do something, but don't tell you the why. I guess because I'm very analytical by nature. I like to know the why behind stuff.
No, I love it, man. Thank you so much for that testimonial again, because I don't want it to be just Montoya sharing his friend Michael with us without really hearing from somebody who's really going through it. Again, I'm very particular about who I allow to get to our community. So thank you for that testimony, Kendrick. Appreciate you for your time. Bernetta, if you will, just a quick testimony. How long have you been going through Black? Because, again, this is my first time hearing what is his students actually go through. I trust a brother. I know him or whatever. I will, you know, trust it with my family if I was coming through Alabama myself, again, but you're actually experiencing Black. So give me a quick thought from you on your experience as well, Bernetta, but thanks for being with us as well.
Thank you. So let me just say this. If you want to win, come in. But if you don't, and you, as your other host said, if you can't take it on the chin, then you don't want it. And if you can't take it on the chin, as Kendrick said, he's going to give it to you. He's going to tell you the truth. He's going to give you the whys. And trust me, anything that's easy, everyone would do it. and this is not easy. And I appreciate Mike. I've been with him, Mike, for what, over almost, it's been more like 2 years for me, but really
2 years for you.
I made a decision that this was what I wanted to do. And I wanted someone much smarter than me, and Mike is definitely fits that definition. And as a black female, it's hard to find someone. And I literally sought Mike out. There was no one online that I trusted and he was here in my area, and I literally sought him out. I mean, that was a gap, but he came back with Blacks Academy. That was the best investment I have ever made. And I look forward to learning because this is something that I can pass on to my community because I care about my community. I want to see people. I have a degree, and several years ago, my sister said, you know, I was giving that big speech 20-something years ago, and she said, we can't do anything with that degree but you, and you're the only one who can do something with that degree. And I held that close to me. And this I'm learning, I can do something with this. I can teach my granddaughter. I can teach my children.
Wow.
And that's why I'm taking it on the chin for them. That is my ultimate goal. No matter how hard it gets, I'm going to learn and I'm going to teach. And that is because of Blacks Academy. And I, if anyone's listening, go, but be ready to win if you want to and take it on the chin. That's all I can say because it's not going to be easy, but it's definitely going to be worth it.
No, I love your testimony, Queen. That is amazing. It literally gave me chill bumps when you start talking about teach to my granddaughter. Because at the end of the day, if you're listening today, I always tell people that are fortunate enough to be in Atlanta, we do our live experience once a month over at Urban Grind Black-owned Coffee Shop here in Midtown. Shout out to them. But I always tell the people at the live experience that at the end of the day, these amazing conversations, and we're the best in the world at hard conversations on race, sex, culture, and business in the African-American community. Don't leave the conversation inside the room. So I love to hear not only her personal testimony, but the fact that she's wants to deliver the information to the next generation. So if you learned anything today, don't keep it to yourself. As I said, we are on this show doing what all the opposite of what people say we don't do. Favorite quote about the Mental Dialogue Community Club is, we can be neighbors without living next to each other. That's what we are. Thank you, Brunetta, for that great testimony. I'm going to shoot it real back to John real quick because I know you kind of had to sit through that, if you will. John, appreciate you for your patience. But I know, again, I've heard you're in the space to help our community too, so I want to make sure, one, that we're highlighting that, but I just thought it was very imperative for anyone who chose this show to listen to, that we give them a resource. And from what I understand, you are a resource as well. So if you will, brother, highlight how you can help people. I don't know if it's particularly to the Atlanta area, but if you will, any thoughts on what you just heard and any resources that you may be able to assist people that are listening with as well.
Absolutely, my friend. That was a fantastic conversation, you know, that we need to continue to have. I can appreciate the Academy. I will definitely come and check out the live experience because I'm here in Atlanta. As far as what we do, again, we're here to help individuals cross the finish line when it comes to that investing in real estate. Oftentimes, you know, you're unsure, you're unaware. So I'm an investor myself from an early age. I've had some not so great lenders. So I crossed to the other side and became a lender to help our community do it. You know, it is something that you can pass along as it's structured properly. So you can find us vicapitallending.com. I'm here a resource. If for any reason I cannot or we don't have the best opportunity or product for you, we have other partners that we can connect you with to make sure that you do cross that finish line.
I love it. Michael, if you will, I know they've heard about Blacks Academy, but if there's any public information that you want to share in reference to what you do personally as far as managing people's money, as well as how they can get in contact with Blacks Academy for, again, I think both of your callers were specifically talking about trading, but I think you teach investing as well. So if you could highlight that, we got about a minute before the end of the show.
Yeah, well, I want to make sure that, you know, trading is where people, you know, where the excitement is, but the approach at Blacks Academy, again, is for it to be a rounded education. So we do teach personal finance. We teach investing, all of it there. But also for, you know, again, for your investing needs, if you're an investor, want to be an investor, individual investor, you can also check us out, SD Capital Management, too. because that's where I have individual investors that have, you know, they just want to learn how to save, budget, you know, think or thinking about the retirement, things of that nature. We talk about that, but we do alternative investment solutions for a number of entities, from small businesses to nonprofits to even now I've gotten into, again, passion projects have been HBCUs and black schools, investing for them, doing some investing consultant as well to kind of change the narrative at the levels, at the institutional levels where they need to be changed. So we kind of, I won't say we do it all, but we do a lot. And there's a much bigger play here at Mind to basically bring the community online and give us the change we want to see. So.
No, I love it. We'll see y'all next Saturday. All I ask is that you think, leave you with a thought from, let me highlight this, Reeducation of the Book, Negro, my new book. Go get it on Amazon. This is a quick discussion, again, from the CEO of Money Motivation about one of the commentaries out of my book. I'll leave y'all with this. All I ask is that you think.
So let me tackle one other piece on the other side, which is part of your question, Montoya, in terms of limiting beliefs or how we think. I'm saying limiting beliefs. I absolutely do think. This is one of the fundamental things that limits our belief about money, because we morally have this thing in our brains that says, yep, if you're making a lot of money, you had to do something shady. You had to do something wrong. And if you and because of that, I think that we end up creating a self-limiting feeling that we don't even recognize exists. And the real ceiling is actually way far off. And the ones who are making a lot of money, they're not letting that self-limiting thing stop them. And I think this is a fundamental thing that really stops us from being able to do a lot more. And we don't even know how deep it's impacting us, but it is a self-limiting thing. And those making a lot of money, they are rejecting all limitations and going way past any self-limiting beliefs that start with what we're talking about right now. And it's deep entrenched in how we think. I absolutely do believe that piece.
And I agree with you, and I think, you know, and not to take this conversation in a different direction, but something else, you know, something part of it that entrenches it so deeply in our community is for those who hold beliefs of Christianity. I mean, in it, they tell you that it's okay to suffer on earth and you'll get your rewards or your riches in heaven. And I honestly, you know, or if you don't succeed, you know, hold on to your faith and you know, so I think those things actually contribute to our inability or our unwillingness to switch our mindset so that we can switch that wealth generator mindset on.
Let me throw this line in because it fits the line. What you just said, Latrice, about the Christianity and the limiting beliefs. I said, by the way, struggling without money is also choosing money over life. The lack of money creates the same evils as the love of money.
Thanks.